Peter Gagg, who drives it through. Oh, that's a magnificent goal, a sensational goal by the Hullamore captain, Mitchell van der Gagg.
We had the high notes on the park. That's how we became a great team together, you know. It was just unfortunate, we never won anything.
Man's in trouble, there's Steve Kirk. The super sub has done it again. And Hullamore are back in front.
Without supporters, you cannot play a game. They are a very, very important part of the club.
Jukovic on the chase, might get there. Handel is with him. Jukovic! Oh, wow! Oh, wow! Lukas Jukovic!
I remember to this day, it was unbelievable. And that's another reason I love going back to Fir Park, because you do get to interact with the supporters again, who were wonderful for me.
Chance here for Motherwell. This is Pettigrew, outnumbered though, still has it. Chance of a lifetime for Pettigrew, and it is there!
Yeah, obviously being on the podcast is everything I've dreamed of.
Goes through the middle though, Marvin Johnson. Defenders backing off. Took a deflection!
Hello and welcome to the MSC podcast. As part of the build-up to the launch of Off Air 3, I sat down and spoke to Stephen Craigan at Fir Park last week, where we go through his career in quite a lot of detail. The podcast was recorded while the players were finishing up for the international break, so there is a bit of background noise on occasion during the podcast. We apologise for that, but hope it doesn't spoil your enjoyment.
I can think back to early days and leaving the club for the first time. You couldn't ever envisage, surely, then you'd be sitting here and the fans have voted you in as a player in the top 25.
I mean, it's probably not as much as me believing it. I can imagine the fans wouldn't have believed it, probably more so than me. It's funny because I'm now in the stage of I'm coaching young players, and you're almost trying to, you know, advise them that, and even the ones you have to let go. I try and use myself as an example that you may one day leave somewhere. But if you go and, I suppose, keep your nose clean, but go and work hard and dedicate yourself, the same people may come back in a few years' time and get you. You know, and sometimes young players, when I'm speaking to them now, they kind of look at it as if, but I can use myself as an example, and Keith Lasley as the example. You know, there's enough players here who have left and come back, so they're a club always that if you do leave, there's always an opportunity coming back. So I think back to myself in the year 2000, it was almost just to go and play first in football.
Yeah.
And that's why it's important for young players now, is to go and play, make a name for yourself, make a career, stand on your own 2 feet instead of sitting just hoping it happens. You have to go and make it happen for yourself. So that was my aim back then, you know, in 2000 to 2003, was to go make something happen. It wasn't to work my way back to the Motherwell Football Club. Sometimes that's what it takes you. You know, that's where my career path took you. So to have that honour of people thinking I've done well enough to be in the top 25 players post-war. I'm very humble about it all, very respectful of it all. I can certainly say I work ever so hard, no matter what I've done, football-wise. So if people have recognised that and have put me in the top 25, then I'm delighted with it.
The initial disappointment, obviously, you then go to Partick Thistle and work your way back. And arriving back at the club, did you feel that there was unfinished business there, that you had something to prove when you came back?
Yes, I did. And sometimes, some people, that kind of pressure can almost put people off. It can affect them, or it can drive them on. And I would have been probably one of the ones who it would drive me on. Right, Graf?
You see that?
Speaking of legends, I was one there. That kind of drove me on. You know, some people get motivated by money or by fame, or mine was always to prove people wrong on a weekly basis, on a daily basis, no matter who it was. If somebody said something negative, I thought, well, I'm going to prove that person wrong. Mm-hmm. Not everybody reacts that way and goes that way. So unfinished business, yes. At what level it was going to take me to, I had no idea, with regards to how successful the team would be, how many games I would play, how many international caps I would make. That wasn't foremost in my mind. It was almost just, as you say, initially to prove people wrong and show actually I'm not a bad player, which the first time round they probably didn't get the chance to do. But again, you're a young player coming through the ranks. A lot of people have to go and play somewhere else, and if you get the opportunity to come back. So I think to go and play 125 odd games at Partick Thistle stood me in good stead. and given me the platform to come back and perform and kind of achieve the things I achieved at the club.
And I suppose the dynamic had changed quite a bit from the time that you went away to coming back with the financial problems. And
well, the squad was younger.
The young guys
the squad was younger. Yeah. You know, so I left a young boy and come back as an experienced player almost. Do you know what I mean? One of those ones where even though at 20, I don't know, 25, 26 was I, something like that. I'd only played 125, maybe 150 games, but you were still seen as an experienced player. Whereas you say, you know, when I left, John Spencer's, Jade Brannan's, Duncan Minzo, Andy Gorham's, these guys were experienced professionals who had played 500 games. So the whole dynamics had changed. That probably helped because the squad was a little bit smaller. I almost got the sense when I come back, when Terry signed me, he was relying on me. And again, that either frightens you or spurs you on.
Yeah.
Thinking, I'm signing you, but I'm going to need you to play every single week. Whereas my previous experience here was, I was here, but I'd probably never play. Mm-hmm. So that mindset had changed in 3 years to put me back into that kind of positive winner's place. So I took that responsibility on board and thought, you know, I want to go and deliver. Probably first and foremost for Terry, because he had put his neck out to sign me. But then once you get back into the club, and things kind of fit in, a lot of members of staff were still here when I was here. You know, so, is that too loud?
No, it's not. Right. Right.
It's international break here. We've got a few days off. Honestly, it's like Christmas Day. Keep that door open, that's it. Keep it open so we can all shout and scream. So it was almost to repay Terry. You know, first and foremost, you think, you know, I don't want to let you down. You've signed me as someone to play in the heart of your team. And that kind of raised my challenge again. Help me. But the dynamics have definitely changed. But I probably wouldn't have come back to the club if the dynamics hadn't have changed. Mm-hmm. If they still had money and had an experienced squad, I probably never have found myself back here. So I looked upon it as an opportunity to go and put a few wrongs right.
How much of an influence was Terry Butcher in bringing you back? It was obviously Thistle really wanted to keep a hold of you at that time, so it wasn't as if you had scoured the free transfer market. And it was...
No, well, it actually came about through meeting Martin Corrigan. I can't think where. I met him somewhere, or he texted me or phoned me. We kind of kept in contact after Martin left vaguely. And he said to me, Terry always talks about you, or he mentions you now and again. I must have met him in Glasgow somewhere. I don't want to say on a social occasion, but I met him somewhere and he said to me, Big Jerry likes you and, you know, he talks about you. And I said, well, I'm on a contract in the summer. He said, but I'll say to him. And that's almost how it came about. Martin said, Terry, listen, Craig is available. I think he'd be keen on coming back if there's any interest. And it kind of snowballed a little bit from then. So Terry's influence, of course, because of Terry's presence and what he had been. And you know, and I grew up in, you know, the magic moments of Terry playing for England and watched the 1990 World Cup. I'm actually coaching guys now who weren't even born in 1990, which is quite concerning. So those memories of Terry, of course, when someone comes out and says, listen, I want to sign you for my team or my club, it almost became, you know, you almost sit up and take notice. I think I respect what was Terry or someone else, but the fact that they say, I want you to come and play on my team, I want you to be centre-half, and you think, oh, you actually feel important. You think, well, you know, I owe this guy something. So coming back was for him, yeah, and the basis of it, there was a few other offers. The management had changed at Partick Thistle. John Lambie had retired. The next guy in charge wasn't someone I particularly wanted to work under. Jerry Collins, Jerry didn't really get on. So I thought, well, I'm going to have to make a move somewhere here along the line. So the fact that Motherwell's interest came kind of eased the issue for me a little bit. So, but again, it was an opportunity. I seen the guy, I keep using that word opportunity, but an opportunity for lots of things to prove people wrong, show what I could do, but also repay Gary.
So it's called a transition.
Hello.
How are we?
You're up next. How many times you walk through from your room to the dressing room?
It was a transition period, obviously, but the success did start to come. The CIS run to the final,
yeah.
Although it was a disappointing conclusion, the semi-final is certainly one that will stick
well,
in
well, it's one of the more dramatic ones. It's probably looking back now, and I said it after, our final was probably the semi-final, because a lot of our guys in the team hadn't really played in a major semi-final before, or so I hadn't played in a major final. You know, we'd maybe play in quarter-final, semi. So the semi-final first and foremost was a big occasion for us. You know, we were thinking, wow, you know, we've maybe playing semi-finals is one thing, but playing a semi-final where you think you have an opportunity of winning is a different thing. Because I played against Rangers in semi-finals and Celtic in semi-finals, you know, and I thought, as much as you're up for it, you think, they're a record side, we're going to have to really... But when we played Hearts that night, there was a genuine belief we could beat them, you know, which is a different kind of feeling I've had in the past, and I'm sure a lot of other guys have. So with the younger ones, I know they played Rangers in the Scottish Cup final a few years probably prior. That was like 2002 Scottish Cup final,
semi-final.
So that probably stood them in good stead, but there was a real belief we can beat Hearts. And I think the dramatic fashion it ended up, you know, scoring the 120th, and been 2-0 up, come back to 2-2, winning 3-2 in 120 minutes, that was probably a Motherwell way, I would say, of thinking you're almost there, getting pegged back, but then obviously having to fight back again. So by the time we reached the final, I remember, I genuinely do remember going out and walking about, and people, players in the team, waving at their families and blowing kisses, and it was almost, I was just happy to be here. And I remember thinking that at that moment, and after the game, speaking to someone about it, and it was almost, I think, you have to play the game and not the occasion. I think we played the occasion.
Yeah.
You know, we were almost out thinking, wow, this big crowd, look at this. Playing against the Rangers team, who had probably been there before, won the competition before, playing in the final was another game for them. Playing in the final for us was a huge occasion for us. And you could see it obviously affected our performance. Going behind early, you could see goals weren't great, but that's why the semi-final probably was our final, was our big achievement. When looking back, if we had to relive it again, we would do it all differently in the final. We would probably live the final like it's our big achievement as opposed to the semi-final. But again, that was through an experience of players not having been there before, not having played in front of as big a Motherwell crowd probably before. You know, the final was probably as big a Motherwell crowd I'd played in until I'd come back. You know, we've been here at games and stuff, but actually a big support in the final. Expectation. A lot of us weren't used to dealing with big expectation of having them win major games. And if you're not used to it, it affects you. And I think that did affected us over.
Is that one of the occasions where the build-up can almost overwhelm you as well, where you've got maybe 10 days, for instance?
You do.
And the press are in every day.
You've loads of thinking time.
Players doing newspaper columns.
Yeah.
It's just completely different dynamic.
You've loads of thinking time, which in league games you get away with. It's still more publicity about an Old Firm game when you're going to play an Old Firm team, but that was different because it was a final. There's different requests, people doing different things, and because we weren't used to it, you know, you almost ride the kind of wave of I'm important, you know, I think I'm quite good, I'm playing in the final. Whereas for Rangers, that was probably just another week for them, because they probably get that most weeks anyway, you know, no matter who they're playing, they have all that speculation. So right away, at the time we didn't realise it, but at the time you think they've got a huge psychological edge. Looking back now, sorry, they've got a huge psychological edge, and that's because they're used to playing those games. So even though Terry's been used to it and Terry experienced it, it's probably his first real, his first major final as a manager would have been.
I'd imagine
probably.
So,
I think he was probably thinking, oh, we've got a, you know, our boys will go out and we're quite a young team. So, many lessons learned from it. Certainly, you know, after I've played big games after that, whether it's for country or club, but I certainly approached them in a different manner because of that negative experience. It doesn't mean to say you won anything, but you still had, mentally, you could approach things a little bit better. We might be a little bit immature mentally getting into that game, just because we weren't really used to being spoke about in glowing terms, or fans hoped we would have. We were probably thinking, well, if we win. You know, that's not a negative. That's just what we thought. You know, we just thought, well, you know, because we'll probably, you know, we'll play one next year, and the year after, and you don't. You know, so sometimes when you have a negative experience, it's how you bounce back. But it certainly was different.
Does that kind of then transcend on to Helicopter Sunday, which took place only a couple of months later, where you don't want to be the ones.
Was that 2006 then?
2005.
Was that 2005? Wow. Listen, that was a strange day. Because certainly, you know, from my own perspective, I was never going to play in a team that was ever going to have a chance of winning the Scottish Premier League, the SPL, the Premiership, whatever it's called, or whatever it was called then. So I think the next best thing was to play against the team on the last day, who had something to lose or something to win, irrespective of who it was. You know, no matter what team it was, to be involved in that, because it's almost roles reverse of the cup final, when there was no expectation on us. Publicity wasn't really on us. It was all on the opposition. They were almost, you know, they were the Motherwell from the League Cup final. Because like, can they win? What will they do? How will they cope? But so they were getting all these questions. They probably had a busier week than what normally had, whereas we just came in. We would just turn up to compete 5-0. Let's Celtic lift the trophy and go home.
Mm-hmm.
When you've seen our team name that day and the things that were on that team, think Martin Corrigan played with a broken kneecap for the last 20 minutes. Willie Kennebrew hadn't played most of the season. He came in and played left centre half beside me. Jim Patterson played left back probably in his, for the first time in his Motherwell career that day. Sean Fagan hadn't played a lot all season. Brian Kerr was back from a cruciate injury. Most of that season was out. Came in. Jerry Britton came on about 36 years of age. Richie Foreman. So we were almost a skeleton team. And any other day we'd probably have lost 7-0. But for some reason the ball would, and Gordon Marshall would go at 42 or 41. He was pulling saves left, right and centre. So as the game goes, you're almost thinking, this is, and you think of their team, Bellamy and Hartson and Sutton and Thompson and Petrov and Agat, Valhan, Baldy. I mean, we're going to think, I just hope we do ourselves a wee bit of justice.
Yeah.
But as it started to snowball and the way the game went, you know, the events of them becoming more nervous as the second half went. I remember having a header cleared off the line just after half time. I remember looking back and thinking, thank goodness I didn't score. That would have made them angry earlier. Do you know what I mean? At 1-0, any game's still alive. I remember Petrov going through, Sutton, Marsh saving them, thinking, oh, come on, just almost put it in the net and get over with.
Yeah.
But it didn't go that way. And then suddenly things started to change. 20 minutes to go. I remember Neil Lennon shooting at Rab Douglas because he went for a cross and he dropped it. And then he shouted at him and emotions were high and they were arguing with each other. And I'm thinking, I remember saying to Lenny, well, keep it clean, but I said, you're a bit nervous here, aren't you? And he almost took it as a bit of aggression towards me, and I thought, oh, I'm thinking, you can't beat us. So that was almost the mindset, and whether that changed, and then, of course, Scott scored the first goal, and the whole thing went chaos. They were in a state of panic. You know, the whole, and little, you know, they probably had 2 or 3 minutes injury time, probably plus another 3 or 4 minutes. Sorry, two or three minutes of normal time plus 3 or 4 minutes of injury time. So they probably still had 5-6 minutes. But it was as if they panicked and everybody just went and played up front. Because the second goal, number Martin, just cleared it down the line. He could hardly walk. I think it was his left knee. He broke his left kneecap. He didn't realise it would be 3 months later, but he cleared it down the line and, you know, then we scored the second goal and everything was like. But it was a real surreal experience because the chairman had put us, I think the season before we'd got top six and we hadn't gained a point. That season, the chairman doubled our bonus after the split, because he thought if we can finish higher up the league, he'll make more money. The pay of double bonuses probably wouldn't really take a dent in it. So we were on double bonus to beat Celtic, not because it was Celtic and because of what was going on, because we had been to the previous four games and that was the fifth. So we were almost celebrating. I was starting to celebrate in the end thinking, we've just got a double bonus. You know, we've got extra money here. And, you know, and without naming names, some players on our team were like disgusted because we'd beat them. I was like, I was like, whoa, we've got the bonus.
I actually saw the Simon Ferry thing with Scott McDonald, where he said that if he cut it back, Jerry Britton promised that he would have missed it.
Jerry said, Jerry's line was, if you'd have passed that to me, I'd have put it so far down Herbal's Road, you'd never get the ball back. You know what I mean? I don't think, there was two things in that. Jerry either might have meant it, or might not have meant it, whether because he couldn't finish or not, but either way, I think it might have ended up down Herbal's Road. But I remember Jerry saying that after, if you scored that to me, I'd have put it so far out of the stadium, basically you'd never get the ball back. You know, so, I mean, everybody knows Scott knows that Scott was never going to pass. Within 40 yards of goal, Scott doesn't pass. So he certainly wasn't going to pass it after 12 yards out. So that was a real kind of, because they were like slumped in the ground. You know, they couldn't believe that Motherwell had beat them. I think they were almost heard on the pitch that Rangers and Hibs had stopped playing. They were quite content. So whether Celtic got wind of that and they started to feel a bit more pressure, Hugh Dallas's last game ever as a referee, you know, I remember speaking to him during the game and he was almost just like enjoying the keys and thinking, he's probably thinking, I'm going to miss it. But if it was ever a game, I think he spoke about it since in the press, hasn't he? He's done a couple of articles on it. You know, if I get into the game, he just, you know, as a Motherwell fan, there was never been any better game. I'm Motherwell, born in Motherwell, always a Motherwell fan. But having that occasion of playing, you know, refereeing his last game and something up for grabs. So it was you can almost live it, you can't live it, but I can see so many incidents happening in my head of just thinking how we didn't lose that day. I have no idea. You know, people blame us, there's no doubt Celtic threw the league title away that year. Absolutely threw it away, but not being able to beat a patched up Motherwell team. But we certainly down there for a few nights, that's for sure.
There was a few seasons of disappointment in the back of Terry leaving, and then Mark McGee comes in, and there was the summer in Austria where everyone seemed to take magic medicine and come out at the start of the season just rejuvenated.
Yeah, the one thing I've always learned about Mark over the piece, and even he was here last year and he left, a lot of players enjoyed his man management. You know, and saying that, some didn't, but if you're playing in this team, you were doing okay. How he managed it, you know, he was an experienced manager coming in here. He'd managed in England and had reasonably successful. He was full of confidence. You know, he spoke about things like they were going to happen. I'd never really dealt with a manager of that kind of mindset before. You know, we're going to win this and beat them, we'll do that. And I was like, oh, will we? And then suddenly you won a game and you thought, oh, we can. And then you won another one. And he almost made you believe no challenge was ever too great for them. And I remember speaking to him, I think it must have been injured one game, and I remember speaking to him and saying to him, do you think we'll win today? And he says, I always think we'll win. I said, do you? And he says, I genuinely do. No matter what team I pick, I always think we'll win. And I thought, as a player, I was thinking, I used to have so many doubts before a game and mindsets and all this stuff, but he was adamant we're going to win. And that stuck with me because the way he used to speak and the way he brought himself across, even coming back here, there was always a belief when he spoke, I thought, he thinks we're going to win. So that transpires on the players, and he got the dynamics of the team right. You know, he signed important players. He signed Chris Porter. You know, he got the best out of David Clarkson. Ross McCormick was a shadow of himself his first season, but was a superstar absolutely. For 6 months after that. You know, Phil was probably back to playing his best football in his second spell in a Motherwell jersey. Partnerships between himself and Mark Reynolds worked. Paul Quinn fitted in. Jim Patterson had lost a lot of weight and started playing. So the dynamics of the team all changed. The team's winning, it doesn't really change an awful lot. Probably throughout that season, the team did, for long spells, the team didn't change. Mm-hmm. You know, and things just seemed to work. Training was different. He brought in, not different, but he just looked at things a different way. We're probably as fit as we ever were. You know, we'd done running sessions that we thought were impossible to do, but we'd done them. You know, we completed things, and it almost gave us that base to go and blow teams away. And that was an enjoyable season for sure, you know, because ultimately you play on a team most seasons, the Motherwell probably lose more games than they win. I felt that season as if we'd won more games than we lost. Certainly more highs than there was lows.
Yeah, and I suppose the end result was Europe, and given the season was tinged with tragedy, was there a real determination amongst the squad to kind of honour Phil's memory and go on and achieve European football?
Well, there was. There certainly was. I mean, it may not have shown on the pitch for a while, but it certainly took a lot of us a long time to get some sort of emotional state where we felt we could play football. You know, we probably played games, certainly I know, we played games in January and February, and it was an absolute blur. You know, whether it's, you play it because you have to, that's your job. It helped probably coming back to training and being amongst people who were always feeling the same thing, but I think we were quite a close-knit group anyway. And that probably spurred us on a little bit more. You know, I'm sure on more than two or three occasions Mark would have used Phil as an example or used that if it was ever a time you needed motivated. And it's not even motivated, if it was ever a time you needed a reality check, you know, or a conscience check of what was going on and who we were and what our identity was, used that, and that kind of sprung us into life and opened our eyes and made us think, right, come on, you almost just lose focus a little bit, you know. So there certainly was an air of determination to make sure we didn't just let the season dwindle away. We didn't want people saying, well, you know, they had Phil's tragedy and they couldn't fulfil what they had set out to do and all that stuff. So certainly in big ways, yeah, that definitely helped us, no doubt. I don't mean helped us as in what happened to Phil, I just mean as in that.
The kind of
determination, mm-hmm. you know, that kind of mindset from us helped us more than anything, just to kind of make sure we achieved something.
And the following season, obviously, the rewards were reaped, and I know it was only two ties against Nonsense.
The disappointing thing was, from a lot of times, I suppose even in the years that preceded what happened in Nonsense, the team that qualified for Europe at the end of one season wasn't always the team that played in Europe the following season. Mm-hmm. You know, and when you run with a small squad and people are successful, that's always the risk. You know, people aren't tied down in 5-year deals. You know, so there's always the chance you can lose two or three. You know, certainly Ross McCormick, that season prior was a huge spark for us. He just couldn't seem to find the same dynamics. Whether there was a speculation that summer of Mark going to Hearts. It was a very late call before he decided he was going to stay, or before Hearts decided he wasn't going to be their manager. So that almost put us out a little bit. Mm-hmm. I generally feel from them we never really recovered. You know, Austria wasn't the same as what it was the previous year. maybe marked regrets about not going to Hearts, I don't know, but certainly at times is determined. Just things just didn't seem right. You know, whether it isn't, it could have been a follow-on from what happened to Phil, and it could have been just people delayed, or just we just didn't have the same appetite. You know, we ended up getting into a relegation battle and just about staying safe. But certainly the Nancy games were terrific, just because it was the first time I'd played a European game, you know, away from my Motherwell, and seeing the, you know, what, the 3,000 Motherwell fans, but something like that. You know, and my mum and dad travelled on the train, met some Motherwell fans, and my dad drank out of a bottle of Buckfast. They always tell me that. That's what my mum does. My dad's away now, but they always tell me that story. My wife went over in the chartered plane and drank champagne all day, and I'd went, you know, so it's an experience that I'll never forget. And I think the players were the same.
Struggle to remember.
You know, away from home was probably a bigger occasion for us than the home game.
Yeah.
Because we knew in the home game if we conceded, we were probably out, because we were never going to score three against them. They were a good side. The disappointing thing is we couldn't hold on for a little bit longer before we got, you know, before they got the first goal. But they were a good side, you know. But again, we probably weren't at our optimum. We're probably a couple of players short of where we'd like to have been. But again, you know, it was proud, just didn't see the picture behind us, but it was a proud moment for a lot of us. Probably some of us making a European debut or playing a European tie of some sort. So tinged with huge disappointment, but obviously a little bit of pride that we'd made a European debut. But disappointment is we couldn't carry it on.
That is quite incredible to consider, though. For 4 or 5 years, Europe was just the norm.
It's funny, I was talking to actually Keith Lansdowne about it the other day, and just talking about how we expected just to be in Europe, you know, and that air of confidence of getting this season, we'll probably do okay this season, we'll come third or fourth and then pop ourselves into Europe, you know. So that almost is what we longed for, because pre-season was a little bit shorter for us. It was in the more meaningful competitive games, real competitive games, probably took our fitness a little bit higher. So they both probably helped each other. The fact that we got into Europe, when we arrived in the first league game of the season, we were probably six games deep off, you know, fitness.
Yeah.
So we were almost ahead of team, so that almost helped us and kept us going. So this night was terrific. We made some terrific ties, some crazy places to go to, some experiences. But just playing competitive games in late June, early July was great. It was a great way to start the season.
There was another cup final in between then as well, and the semi-final must again be a memory for you, scoring the opening goal again.
Yeah, I know, yeah. So I scored in 2005. I always kept my goals for Motherwell just for the big games. Yeah, it was, again, that was getting into that game thinking, we can win this. You know, it was a genuine belief that we could, players always believe they can win games anyway, but when you weigh it up against probability and expectability, you know, there's certainly, when you play a so-called smaller side like ourselves, then you think, like, this is, who's got the bottle for this? So that was a big one. I know, and Stuart McCall always takes so much credit for the first goal, because we had a very good wee man. Magnificent. It was after about 2 minutes. I think they had actually started quite well. They hit the crossbar. They had a shot early on, and we were about like, oh, let's just set up. So and I remember Stuart, it was after about 2.5, 3 minutes, waved me up for a corner, and I was like, he's shouting, have you not checked the board? You're supposed to be going up. I'm like, right, okay, I'll go up. Just to be honest, I've been up probably 500 times and never even scored. And the 500-600 corners and probably scored one goal. So I thought, okay, I'll go up. And luckily, Peter Enkelman came for the cross and decided he was going to leave it. It almost bounced off my head, and I thought, oh, I've just scored a Scottish Cup semi-final. So it was a bit emotional. I got a bit excited. I took a lot of satisfaction out of that semi-final. My dad also wasn't well at the time. I lost my dad in 2011 Cup final. I lost my dad in January 2012, so that was, he actually didn't get to the game. He died of cancer. Not that this is a big emotional story, but he missed the goal. Well, he saw it on TV, but he wasn't at the game. So that was almost a wee driving force for me as well. So he didn't make the cup final either. I thought, was that the semi final? He made the semi final actually, and he didn't make the final. And I kind of probably knew that might have been the last occasion that a big game he might have been able to watch me. And so all the kind of different mixed emotions of playing a semi-final,
yeah,
score and people not being well, it somehow has to come out. And it came out in all sorts of ways, but I think it just showed how much, because we had been the finals, we'd been the semi-finals before, and we hadn't performed a bit, lost. So that was, it was nice to think of it, another final to look forward to.
The Stuart McCall team was obviously the team that you finished up your career, mm-hmm, playing in, and it was just a joy to watch at times. Some brilliant results, some brilliant performances. It seemed like a perfect fit, Stuart McCall and Motherwell, for years that he was there.
Stuart was very good. You know, I spoke earlier about Mark having good people skills. I mean, nobody really touched on Craig Brown, but Craig Brown had very good man management skills, particularly with older players. Very good people skills. And as a coach now, whether I'm ever a manager, he'll know, but you certainly try and take little things from how they dealt with situations and how he spoke. Stuart was the same. Stuart was almost, I don't think Stuart liked confrontation. You know, he tried to keep everything calm, didn't want anybody in conflict. Wasn't that kind of personality. So, and some of the people, players can walk over the top off, and other players respect that and deal with it. And Stuart was that type. He earned the respect for how he went about it. So, again, he probably didn't have big squads then. He didn't have a squad of 25 players. We almost were close-knit thinking, out with our 14, 15, there's probably not an awful lot to come in. So it almost knits you together, and you trust each other, and you rely on each other, you work hard for each other. And again, Stuart's in good players, and Michael Higgins scored goals, Nicky Law was a terrific centre for us, Murph was bang on form. You know, so it was a good team to play in. I mean, on the days that we could beat teams comfortably, we had a few heavy defeats, but you know, you accept that and get on with it, because you know that there's better times around the corner. So Stuart was great for the club. You know, after I left it, you know, it was a shame how he had to leave, but the success he brought, I think when he came in, I can't imagine people thought he would have delivered on what he did, and did it with a little bit of flair as well. So, but again, every time we qualified for Europe, we never had the same team the next year, and then people left, so we were almost getting, so it was almost tough every year to keep fighting on. But no, it was great under Stuart. I still speak to him, I still text him, and again, we catch up. You know, it's almost like a friendship now, which is nice. You know, there's not very many managers I would think I have a friendship with, not because I don't like them, just because they're a bit older, but Stuart, you always felt as if you have a chat with him, it was like two friends talking. So I think that's the kind of mark he left to me.
And I know we hadn't talked about Craig Brown, but he obviously did replace a manager where you talk about all the highs and everything else. You may not have experienced some of these highs if the Jim Gannon spell had continued. And,
yeah, well, if Jim had got his way, I wouldn't have been at the football club. You know, that's not, you know, I've had 6 months left on my contract, I probably would have left. I think I had 2.5 years left on my contract, so I was never going to walk away from the contract. You know, you almost get the stage in your career where you think, and, you know, the people I spoke to, listen, they didn't really fancy me as a player. I have no problems with that. You know, but don't, there's things he'd done and tried to do behind, not behind my back, but he tried to, you know, stir things up and pose a few problems and a few hurdles, and I think, this need to be done. You know, I'm a man, you know, I'm happy, come and let me know. You know, we'll have a chat about it and see if we can do something. But, you know, I'd almost got to the stage where the people I spoke to, and I have obviously my own opinion, I thought, I'm going to be here longer than you. I don't, you know, I never said that to him, but I kind of worked out, it's just going to blow up in his face. You know, he was, you know, make a lot of enemies. You know, let's be honest, he signed some terrific players.
His
recruitment was terrific, it really was. You think of Chris Humphrey and Steve Jennings and James Cook and bringing in John Ruddy and Lukas Jukovic. You know, that was good players, you know, really players who spent a few years at the club, and other managers got the benefit out of them. So there was no, you know, problems with that. His tactics, his training, very good, very well organised, new stuff. But when I speak about Craig and I speak about Terry at the start, Terry went crazy at the end, he was bonkers. And I speak about Stuart McCall and Mark McGee. I speak about people skills and personality, people's personality. Jim lacked that a little bit. You know, so I'm guessing he had to be so good on the pitch, training pitch, because he didn't really have a personality off it. To deal with people or speak to people or people to build relationships with people. Of course, the guys he brought in felt a sense of loyalty to him, which is understandable. Now, we used to do practice matches on a Friday, and our team would have been Stevie Hamill, me, Steve McGarry, Laz Johnson, Jim O'Brien. The reserve team were almost beating the first team in a Friday's practice match. And he couldn't get the grips with us, because I'm thinking, well, look, your team's, you know, the team you're playing is quite experienced. You know, we're quite a big squad there. So we were almost better than them. Well, we thought we were. So on a Friday, you're leaving out four boys, you're even your match day squad and stuff. And that's what happens. We deal with that. But as I say, we almost got the sense of, well, I did anyway, I'm going to be here. I mean, I have 2.5 years left. I'm thinking, there's no way you'll be here for 2.5 years. You just, things going on and press getting upset and people at the club, you could sense, weren't happy with what was going on. And I thought, this is going to come to a head. And you think, once results don't go for you, then you would think something might happen. So, I mean, I didn't play an awful lot in the gym, which is fine. I have no problems. If I've seen him now, I go and speak to him. I have no grievances, but it just almost, the people admit, maybe you shouldn't have done that, shouldn't have said that then. And you move on.
Did I know. We don't want to dwell on this, and this interview is not about Jim Gannon. But do you kind of almost feel vindicated somewhat when you see what happened with him further down the line, where the same situations were replicated?
Well, I wasn't surprised, put it that way. I wasn't shocked that he'd fell out with people and he had ostracised people, and because you do it with. We weren't a bad bunch, and I don't think I'm a bad guy. That I'm not overly confrontational. You know, yes, if it's something to say, I would say it, but I wouldn't go in an aggressive manner. The way some of the things he'd done and said and how he treated me, I could have. So if you do it to someone more aggressive and a stronger personality than I was, then you're going to be met with aggression and anger. And I think that's what happened further down the line. So it's probably the one big thing that he lacked, was being able to deal with people. I mean, if you're speaking to him now, you'd probably deny it, and that's fine. But certainly how you deal with senior professionals. I always think your senior professionals at a football club are the ones that will drive the club forward. I don't mean drive the club forward. They were the ones who will set the example. So even if you're not playing them, if you look after them in the right way and you give them the respect that they're due, and you try and be as honest with them as you possibly can, senior players will respect that. And I know the manager walked through there, but even just watching the training this week, and I'll just probably not do the interview, but watching Peter Hartley and Stevie Hamill, and guys driving training, the older boys driving training and being the best in training, the rest of the training follows. You know, I'm not saying we were a bad bunch and we didn't train properly, but there was a sense of disappointment of how we were treated, some of us were treated. And it affected our training performances, which I think it then affected our games, and it affected, you know, so. Because you always know in management, somewhere along the line, you might have to go back and ask someone for a favour. You might have to say, I need you to play today. And if they're not mentally right, or the performance isn't as what it should be, then that manager has a problem. You always will need someone. So I wasn't surprised that other people met him head on. I knew a couple of people at other clubs who had dealt with him after Motherwell, and it was almost role reversal of the exact same thing. So if that's your personality and that's how you do it, then you're never probably going to change.
Gannon aside, though, it's clear how much respect you've had for so many managers that you've worked under. How do you try and take the best bits of what you've learned from managers and take it into your coaching?
You do. You do until your team lose a game, or you get beat at half time, or somebody makes a mistake. You almost forget that once I was at, you almost forget once you were a player. But you do, and I think that's the biggest thing. Listen, it's a bit easier as an under 20 coach to deal with young players and speak to them and have a relationship with them. And I'm in relation to them as a person, and you can speak to them and you know, and be on a personal level with them. There's not as much pressure on under 20 managers as a first team manager. But certainly that's the biggest thing I've taken as I got older, was how people dealt with players, how they dealt with situations. You know, how not to meet head on and try and be too much in people's faces. Encouragement's the best way, and it is, there's no doubt, but I'm in a job just now where I'm trying to prepare young players to play in Motherwell's first team. And if it's all too nice and too easy and too smooth, I'm trying to prepare young players to play in our first team. So there's going to be moments we fall out, and there's moments and I get after them, because it's not all smooth in the first team. So it's finding that balance between having that good personality but trying to chase them as well. So, but no, listen, I've had lots of good experiences. And I like to think that I'm going to say class myself an example, but I use myself as an example for young players who work hard and train hard and get the rewards, because I certainly wasn't as good as some of those kids in there. Didn't have the ability that they have, didn't have the individual qualities that they had, the attributes that they have. But I had a better attitude than what some of them have. And I'm trying to almost tell them that and balance it off. And given the experience, I left the club been me, and I had to go and find for myself. I was away from home. So you're almost trying to relive my career with them, but hoping they can take on board what you're telling them. Some of them look at you and say, yeah, dead on, I know they are, and some take it serious and go. Not everybody's in that dressing room going to play in our first team, I'm fully aware of that. But the more we can get in the first team, then the better it is for them, because it's their career, you know, it's not going to be mine. So I don't even know if that's the question you asked, or sometimes I go off on a tangent and start off on a web and all the things.
I can't remember the question.
No, it was about your good experiences from Motherwell managers. So you're trying to take it on board.
And I suppose what better way to start your career than a final at Hampden? I think some of you, even supporters my age, who can't really remember winning a cup final. No. The Youth Cup final was fantastic.
Oh, it was great. It was such a... at the time, probably looking back now, you know, when you're involved in things, you just get on with it, you deal with it and you accept it. But I mean, for the first time in the club's history, I would have won the Youth Cup final. You know, I said to these kids, listen, I said to some of them on the night, this may be the biggest game you ever get. This may be the biggest final you ever play in. Don't think you might get there next year and the following year and win it the following year. You know, law of averages, Motherwell never won it before. So it could be another 30 years before they win it again. I hope not. I hope it's certainly not, you know, another 20 or 30 years before they're in the final again or wherever it might be. But go and be different. Go and make a name for yourself. Go and have people talking about you for years to come. Now people will think back to the, what was it, 2016? No, 17, well, yeah, 2016.
It would have been
2017. So
2016.
So 2016. People will synonymously think of that team. Who was that team? You know, where's that player? Where did he end up? I said, you'll end up on message boards, you'll end up on forums in years to come. Where did he end up? Where is he playing? He doesn't play anymore. He does that. Be one of the ones who people can say, you know, he had a great career. And I think when you look at that team, if Cad's now playing the first team, it has a value. Alan Campbell now playing the first team. Sold Ben Hall for over £200,000. Jack McMillan's made his debut at that team. Ross McLean's made his debut at that team. David Ferguson's now left, but played more games after that. Tom Thomas is now still playing in the Scottish Premiership. Dylan Macken's obviously dropped down to play first team football. But there's a good core. David Turnbull's waiting to come through. Adam Livingston's waiting to come through. Jay Casey's waiting to come through. So they're still, out of that team, there's still a good chunk have an association with the club, you know, and have set that example. And that's almost how we sell to the academy players. Look what they've done, look where they are. They come through. It's a great pathway for us to sell to the young players. But it was great. It was almost like I said it's a proper game, and I used the line that when I spoke to Mark McGee earlier, I genuinely thought, after listening to Mark, after every team, I thought we can win this. And I remember standing, we went up to the quarter for some food, and the players might not remember it. I almost gave like an emotional speech about my life and why I ended up with Motherwell, all that nonsense. But I said to them, I know we're going to win. I know we're going to win. The problem you have is you have to believe it as well. If you have as much belief in you as what I have in you, well, I have no doubt we're going to win the game. I had no idea we're going to win the game or not, but that's the psychology you play with. Do you know what I mean? That was the psychology. I'm thinking, give them something. As a player, I always thought, oh, wonder will we win? Genuinely, as a manager, every week, every time I go to play, I think we're going to win today. I don't care who we play. I don't know why I have that. Probably because I see them and I know how they can perform and I know what attributes we've got and I know how we can do in games. But that was the message I gave to them that day was, I know we're going to win. And from there, when I seen them walking out getting under the bus, I genuinely thought, we are going to win. You know, I got a sense from them of how they felt, and you know, the nerves had gone, they were ready for the occasion. They, you know, I said, go showcase yourself, my goodness, what a bit on TV, people are talking about it. There's 1,500, 1,600 Motherwell fans. I said, go and make a name for you. And to be fair, they did, it was great. You know, looking back at it and some of the goals we scored, we're a little bit lucky with a couple here and there. We give ourselves a bit of a problem conceding goals, but the whole occasion was just great. And I just hope it's something that even if they never play football again, they didn't look back on that night and think, Motherwell gave me something, or Stephen Craig played a part in me achieving something that night, then, you know, it'll all be worthwhile.
And that kind of relationship, you see the places, there seems to be a real buzz about the players, yourself and the manager, clearly got a good relationship back when teamer. Are all kind of pushing towards and have got quite a guys like Laz, yourself, Stevie Hamill, Stevie McManus, have all got quite deep rooted links to the club.
Yeah, and you know, sometimes that can be problematic because we all live in the past, you know, but we're all young coaches desperate to improve and desperate to get better. The manager we have is a very good coach. You know, Stevie's background up before he got management was coaching. Some people just go straight into management, but he was a very good coach. And I think he encourages us to coach. Doesn't encourage us to put a session on the home. You know, encourages us to get something out of it. Make sure our team's organised. Make sure the shape of our team's right. Make sure the players know their individual roles. And it probably comes from me and him working together in Northern Ireland. And when we worked in Northern Ireland youth teams, we never had the best players. So we had to find a way of closing a gap when we used to play against bigger teams. And it was through organisation. It was through players understanding their responsibilities. Making sure the shape of the team was right, making sure they understood the rules. So when you put them onto the pitch, you could say, if the ball's here, where will you be? If he's got the ball, what should you do? Almost trying to give them, at times probably give them too much information. International was hard because you had to only have them for 5 or 6 days, 4 or 5 days sometimes. Here, you can do it over a longer period. So like Keith wants to learn as a coach. You know, Keith's never really coached up until the season, really, on a regular basis. Steve McManus is now coaching on a regular basis. So we've got a young, hungry staff who want success and who want to, you know, learn and get better. And Stephen's the same. You know, he's a bubbly character. He's a deep character at times. I probably know him better than the rest. So we have a friendship. We have a relationship, but we have a friendship out of football as well. You know, he knows I won't just accept what he says. I'll challenge him, and he challenges me. Not over the head of Keith. I'm just saying, as in personalities, that's what we do. We fall out. We speak. You know, so. But he's been able to mould a squad into his way of thinking and what he thinks can win football game. And he's got senior players. He's never had senior players like that, but he's got a group of players now who drive the dressing room and guys who drive training, who make training better. I mean, he made a great point today. He said, we put the training on, you decide what it's like, you decide what the standard's like, you decide what the tempo's like by how you go about it. And if you've got four or five at the top end who are really driving that every day, and you know, everyone follows. So he's brought in leaders and people can follow behind. I'm not saying there weren't leaders here before, but he's certainly brought in one.
Did you see your dislocated up?
And I'm delighted he's getting success because I know how hard he works. He'll almost put you off management with the amount of work that he does, the amount of prep that he does, and the amount of detail he used to do. You almost think, oh, where do you find the time for that? But that's what he wanted to do, and that's what he does. He wouldn't change if he managed Motherwell, he managed East Fife without being this. He would do the same thing. That's just how he is as a person. So as the young coaches, I'm a bit older than Stephen and Keith, but you almost see that, and they get into that mould. So I think certainly the club's in good hands coaching wise over the next few years. We all know first team football's results are most important. At the minute they're going well, and at the minute it's great. And we hope it continues that way.
What about the kind of mix up? Sorry, I'll wrap this up.
No, far away.
But you've now got a kind of a broadcasting hat on at times, mm-hmm. and a coaching hat. How do you find the balance of it? It seems to be something you've really taken to and seem to enjoy, certainly.
I think it helps me on the broadcasting side because you're in the game on a daily basis. You're talking about tactics, you're talking about shape, you're talking about how to counteract someone else's formation, you know, roles of a person, how they play. You know, I hear them talking about teams, and I don't really deal with a lot of first team stuff, but I hear them talking in meetings and stuff about how they play, how Motherwell play against that. So when you're in the broadcasting, you almost see things. I just think it keeps you on the ground. When you're involved in the game, I don't mean to use the buzzwords, but you can understand tactical changes, you can see tactical changes. I think you can put a bit of tactical nous into what you're saying as opposed to just being generic and digging someone out. I always like to think if I'm going to do something or say something on broadcasting, it's with a purpose, and it's something that I believe in. So when I'm telling somebody something, or I'm talking about a part of a team or a system change, that I actually know what I'm talking about. You know, or if I get into an argument, I don't argue just to back my own case up. So I think that helps being on the ground every day and coaching and training and dealing with young players. And also then suddenly a young player breaks into somebody's first team and people think, oh, who's that guy? I think, well, I know who it is because we actually played against him last week. So little things that you get little insights, which when you're not in the game, you don't kind of get. So it's nice to think you can give a little more in-depth knowledge when you're talking. Some people have said a lot of nonsense, but I'll call in-depth knowledge.
And just to kind of conclude, that player that has been taken to by the supporters, you said just if we perhaps weren't the greatest player technically, but showed so much dedication when you had a Northern Ireland strip on, a Partick Thistle strip, a Motherwell strip. Is that kind of how you would like to be remembered as a player, someone that just gave their all for the cause?
Yeah, just because a lot of people won't know what I've done off the pitch, but you know, someone who got the best out of himself was a little bit better than what people give me credit for, because you don't play 54 times for your country and they'll have something.
No,
they play over 500 games. So, just that people could appreciate what I've done as a football player. You know, I came from a hard working background. I never get anything handed on the plate to me. I'm still the same after football. No one just gives me anything. I have to go and work for everything I get, put in long hours, like most people do. And I'm not sitting here saying, oh, I'm the only one that's ever done that. But I think another phrase someone said, when you look back at your career, you can't cheat it. And I got out of it, I got the most or the maximum out of my career I think I could ever have got. I take a lot of satisfaction in that, because other people who were supposedly better or supposedly didn't. So someone who dedicated himself to the profession and got the best out of it, enjoyed himself, and I hope people who remember me as a player will think, well, he just at least remember my name for something. An own goal, a good goal scored, a moment of madness, I don't care, but if your name pops up somewhere, then you've made a mark on someone.
And would you have expected when you came to Motherwell all these years ago that you now have such an affection for the club?
No. Well, I always had an affection for the club because I left them at 17. You know, and it's the first club I remember. It's the first full-time football environment that I remember. And I didn't... even if I'd left in 2000 and never come back again, I still would have had an affinity with the club thing, and that's where I had... I kind of grew up here, really. You know, because at 17, you don't really... You know, I met my girlfriend, and now my wife. Not through Motherwell, but I was here at the time, and I got a daughter, which I would never have had if I hadn't met, you know, Elaine at the time, and my wife. So many good memories of coming to Scotland and being involved with Motherwell. Probably the first 6 years, everything apart from football, you know, but it almost gave me a ground in life. I grew up here, you know, Karen Patterson's still here when I came, Alan Dick, remember when I came here, John Swinburne, God rest his soul, passed away, but those guys were about when I first came over here, Jim Griffin, first person I ever spoke to in the phone when I landed and arrived in Glasgow train station was Jim Griffin. You know, little did I know much about Jim Griffin until I got and realised who he was, and you know, I see him coach, so I see him in the college with the kids, so out with football, it's given me so much. Motherwell Football Club is first and foremost. You know, I hope I've given the club as much football-wise as it's given to me. But I never imagined that it would go on the 23rd or 24th of September 1994. I never imagined it would end up how it has, and that I would spend the majority of my working life involved with the club. Lads, see you later, wee man. Cheers. So it's been great. I've loved it. I genuinely have. And irrespective of what happens the rest of my life, I'll still have a huge part of my life will be involved with Motherwell. A huge part of my heart will be involved with Motherwell. Just because it's played such an important part in me growing up and maturing and seeing things in life. It's been great. I mean, I hope it continues for a few more years, but you just never know in this game.
That's absolutely brilliant. Super. Thank you very much.
down. No, I won't.